Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it will be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for a few minutes. We have with us in studio Jeannie Soderman, and we're going to be talking today about the plan. And there is a plan. If you read the occult literature as I do, they always talk about the plan, and there's a capital P to that. And, of course, it is for a worldwide feudalistic system. Of course, it will ostensibly be controlled from the local level, but, of course, what happens at the local level will reflect the national plan. Now, in this, of course, they openly acknowledge that there's just too many people in the world, and we're going to have to get rid of a lot of the people. We're going to have to change the way of life of people. We're going to have a sustainable world where people do not use that many of the natural resources that are there, so that they'll be there for the future generations. And if you have read the Global Biodiversity the assessment, which is the working plan, and of course Agenda 21 is how this will be implemented, you'll realize, of course, they intend to destroy Christianity. They intend to destroy Judaism and Islam, monotheistic religions, and that's really what our war in the Middle East is an effort to do, the first step towards the destruction of Islam. And of course, when Islam is destroyed, why, of course, Judaism and Christianity will not be far behind. And then, of course, the extension of this into the local community. And with that, I want to introduce you, Jeannie Soderman. And Jeannie used to be an environmentalist, and, well, she's still an environmentalist, but now, of course, she realizes that the environmental movement has been hijacked by those who would use its idealism to justify the passage of laws which will eventually restrict the freedom of every human being who is allowed to continue living in the world. Good evening, Jeannie. How are you?
I'm fine, Dr. Stan. Thank you for having me on again.
Well, it's always good to have you. And, of course, Jeannie travels throughout the world, and the same things are really happening every place, aren't they, in Central and South America?
Yeah, it looks like the people that we know in certain sources, they are saying that the communists are agitating in Central and South America, and it looks like they'll be having another war in Central and South America in the near future. Not sure when that will be, but they're creating chaos. And of course, the communist parties in that area always promise the people that they will have land, that they will have food, that they will have jobs.
But of course, what they will have no land, they will have no food, and the jobs they will have are those that the government gives them working on the government's property, because of course, everything will be collectivized. And what does this have to do with communism? Well, what does Mikhail Gorbachev have to do with communism? The ex-dictator of Russia is working very closely with all of the environmentalists in the world today, in fact, leading this whole environmental movement, which is being used to bring about a world feudalistic system. And for those of you who don't understand that it never was any communism in Russia, you had a feudalistic system. And this is what they're going to be imposing here through these local community organizations. So what you just said about the communist agitation in Central and South America, because communism is alive and well, what does this have to do with Agenda 21? What does this have to do with these various plans that they're invoking?
Well, Agenda 21 was adopted in 1992. At the Rio conference in Brazil. And what that entails, it's a global blueprint for regulating humans, what we will eat, what we will wear, what we will think. And so Agenda 21 is the global blueprint for the 21st century. What it entails is managing the natural resources that we as humans use. And what's coming up here in Santa Cruz County is I was searching for a particular document, and it was called the Strategic Plan of ICLE. And ICLE is an acronym for the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. This strategic plan was for 5 years, for 2001 and 2006. And Dr. Stand, I have given you the plan where they have stated that it's divided into three sections, and ICLE, actually the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, they are the go-between organization between the elitists and who make up all the United Nations treaties and the local government here throughout the whole world. And what they are doing is they are actually saying to the local elected bureaucrats that this is the plan and you better go along with it.
Well, you know, it's really interesting here. This is what it says in what you just gave me. On the occasion of ICLAI's 10th anniversary, we, the ICLAI family of local governments, recognize the interdependence between human quality of life and the state of the natural environment. The problems of poverty, underdevelopment, and environmental degradation are closely linked and must be addressed as equal priorities. This is the challenge of sustainable development, to design investments and policies that achieve simultaneous improvements in economic, environmental, and social conditions. Now, that's a lot of gobbledygook. Unless you understand what they're really saying is, we are a family of local governments. In other words, all local governments will carry out this program of sustainable development. And basically, of course, what we're going to do is we're going to address poverty, underdevelopment, environmental degradation. We're going to control everything through these local governments, but we are a family. And then, of course, it goes on to list these organizations all throughout the world that, of course, have joined together in this family of local organizations. And you've got them, Stockholm, Sweden, you know, Sutherland, Australia, Sydney, Australia, you've got
San Diego,
San Francisco, and Santa Cruz, of course, where we live. These are listed in this family of nations, family of these local organizations. And the whole idea is that you will have total control over everything through these local communities or local organizations. And, of course, they are organized to take over control of local governments. And most people just want to live and be left alone. But these other people are totally dedicated. They work day and night to control you and establish this feudal system locally, which of course will be controlled by the international feudal lords, the new rulers of the world.
Well, what is happening is the dictates are coming through ICLEI, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. They are based out of Canada. They do have one office in the United States, and that is in Berkeley, California. This strategic plan, the final version was March of 2001, and it's in three parts. The first part is a democratic association of local governments, and they talk about the services that they are going to be providing for the local government, such as professional trainers coming in and instructing them in international law. And it talks about regional development is very important. The second part is an international environmental agency for local government. And this is what ICLEI is about. It is the international environmental agency that is mandating all the regulations for the environmental portion of the local government. They talk about training, technical services, and regional projects. And then the third part of the strategic plan is going to be a worldwide movement of local governments. And it talks about cities for climate protection campaign, local Agenda 21 campaign, which is really heavy here in Santa Cruz County, California.
And for Agenda 21 is really just the agenda for the 21st century. This
right.
is the plan for the 21st century.
And then they have the water campaign. And so this strategic plan, Dr. Stan, it's not super detailed, but it talks about their goals. They have about six goals. It's very generalized, but the goal, the first goal is to promote environmental and sustainable development initiatives.
And when you say sustainable development, remember that's just socialism. That's control and regulation.
Yes, total socialism. And goal two is to support local level initiatives. So all the initiatives will be done locally in the local government.
As if we were somehow coming up with these ideas ourselves, but all the ideas are dictated from above, and they are simply adopted locally by the people that they elect. And they will come in with any sum of money they need to make sure that their candidates get elected. I mean, when they first took over Santa Cruz, why, of course, the money came in from Santa Monica and from other areas under Tom Hayden's control.
Mm-hmm. And goal three is information training, where they have manuals. They actually come into the county, these professional facilitators, and train the elected officials or the commissions, such as the water commission here. They train a lot using the internet, and that is very powerful for them, to use the internet as a training tool. And then the fourth goal is for local environmental protection initiatives, and they talk about poverty alleviation activities, which is social justice. It's just meaning redistribution of wealth. That's all what it means. And goal five is to establish strategic alliances with other international organizations. So this is where the local government entities tie in with, say, IUCN, the International Union of the Conservation of Nature. That's the organization that has written a lot of our treaties, especially the Biodiversity Treaty. And goal six is to evaluate and report on the global environmental sustainable development. And they're going to look at the local practices and initiatives. And each year, the community, even now, Santa Cruz County has to report to the federal government how their Agenda 21 is progressing along. Here again, this is a very important strategic plan. It's 21 pages, not too detailed, but it does give you an idea that the movers and the shakers are not the local people. They are the big international organizations that's mandating these initiatives down to the local level.
And, of course, controlled by people of great wealth, the new feudal lords. And any of you out there who would like to see the Agenda 21 plan for Santa Cruz, why, we do have that available through Radio Liberty. What's fascinating, they want to get you out of your cars. They want to do away with roads. The roads that are allowed, there will be toll roads to cut down on traffic. They want to get everybody onto bicycles. And you say, this is crazy talk. Well, it may be crazy, Doc, but it's sort of like an insane asylum, the only sane people being the inmates, and the craziest people of all have the keys to the institution, and that's really what this is all about. And another thing, Jeannie, you mentioned water. Mm-hmm. They intend to take over our water boards here in the Monterey Bay area, in the Soquel area. They have a group of radical environmentalists who are moving to take over the local water board to implement, of course, these policies that they have actually indeed created. In fact, for years they blocked anything effective being done so that they could come in with their solutions, which would even be worse.
Well, that's true. And no matter who they vote into the water board, say locally it's the Soquel Creek Water Board, we have people that's been on that particular water board for many, many years. But you know what, Dr. Stan? They are following the international mandates, unfortunately. Not openly, but there are three new people that would like to be on the Soquel Creek Water Board. And looking at them and having seen them in committees, these are deep ecologists. And I'm looking at something that was mailed to me, and it's talking about the sustainability and health of the aquifer is our priority.
And what we want to do is control all the water, and by controlling the water, we control the people. And that's what it's really all about. Control the water, control the people. Incidentally, at the conference we're going to be having on the 23rd of November at Aptos Seascape Golf Course, and we hope all of you will be there. Jeannie's going to be there talking, and we will have, of course, the World Bank Water Policy, the master plan for the entire world, which Jeannie has summarized from the what was it, 100 pages or so of initial reports?
Yeah, about 141 pages.
Right, 140 pages. But we've summarized that for you. And then we'll have all this on Eclay. Here we'll have their master plan, which they were nice enough to give us, and telling you how Santa Cruz fits into this whole concept, this worldwide concept of the New World Feudalist Society under the control of the ruling elite, of course, in the name of sustainable development.
Well, water is very, very important. Water creates food, so we humans can eat and survive. Water is necessary for the crops, for the cattle. And here again, SoCal Creek Water Board, the people that are running for it, the three new deep ecologists, they talk about the safety of a water supply. Well, we have the best water quality in California here in Santa Cruz County.
Now give them a little time, though. They'll be able to take care of that problem.
Oh, right.
In fact, now they want, of course, want to begin recycling water here. And instead of doing what was logical and putting in the dams, which we have out into all the, you know, the areas where we have this massive rainfall, we could have our dams and reservoirs. They block them at every turn. And now they want you to drink recycled water.
Well, that's true, because I did go to the Gaia conference about a month and a half ago at the Civic Center in Santa Cruz, California.
That's where you worship Mother Earth?
Yes, very definitely. It was very spiritual. They had a lady in kind of old clothes that resembled maybe some branches and leaves and so forth, and she was a Gaia. Mother Earth. And they did talk about water, especially was interesting talk by Michael Reynolds. To me, he looked like an old hippie. He's the one that created Earthship. And this is a sustainable home. They look like berms set in the earth. And so here again, he talks about they look like adobe buildings, but they're like berms set in the earth. They catch the water, rainwater, and also they use recycled water. And the part that actually I was not pleased with is the sewage would be, the filtrating plant would be like a jungle, and the plants and the soil would cleanse the sewage, and that would be in your living room. And I said to my husband, did you know that the homes are going to have a sewage plant in the living room? And Jim says, not my house. And one thing he did say, Michael Reynolds, he did say, the people will be in cages. The wildlife will be running free outside. And he talked about the homes. They were going to be cluster units. And this is a term that the ecologists use. They're going to be on a cellular level. Each unit is self-sustaining. And he had pictures of the cluster units of these berms. And they looked actually like beehives, Dr. Stand. The only thing that was in the middle of these cluster home units was a transportation system that would move the people from one cluster to another.
That's because they won't have any cars anymore. And
that's true.
And, of course, all of this is this incredible, crazy planning, you know, of this wonderful new utopian world they're going to create. They would call this sustainable housing units.
Well, the water is so important because we looked at the World Bank water policy, and they call it demand management, which really means they're going to have tiered water rates, meaning if you use a little bit of water, then you'll get the best rate. And then if you use it for a certain thing like agriculture, they're going to up the fees because they feel the water should not be used priority for agriculture, but for fish. The fish need the fresh water.
But you know what's even more incredible? You read the plan, and it's all there in the Global Biodiversity Assessment. Incidentally, you want to read the summary that Jeanine put together. It's in our Sustainable Development Syllabus. Sustainable Development Syllabus. But they talk about food, and they say shortages of food are better than abundance. Let me repeat that. Shortages of food are better than abundance. What are they talking about? Well, they're talking about starving the people into submission. You know, they don't want an abundance of food. And you say, well, that's crazy talk. Well, we're not dealing with rational people, ladies and gentlemen. You only need to come to Santa Cruz and see some of these conferences to realize that. These people, of course, are have both feet firmly planted in the clouds. And they do not realize that when this new world feudalistic system is in place, these people will all be in the concentration camps, because, of course, the real rulers would have no use for these useful idiots. Right now we've got Rory calling in from Watsonville. Hi, Rory. Did we hit a familiar chord with you?
Yeah, I was listening with great interest, and I was wondering if, Jeanie, if you had any information on what of the Agenda 21 program might have had an effect or an impact on the Klamath Basin, Tule Lake Basin water cutoff of last year. Did you have any additional information on that? We know it was a bad decision based on a bottom-feeding fish.
Mm-hmm.
Two species of sucker fish and mm-hmm. whatnot. But the reason I bring it up is I heard a talk recently by a gentleman up there that runs a fertilizer company
mm-hmm.
out of, I think it was Malin. His business last year dropped 75% in 1 year because of that water cutoff. And there have been multiple auctions and people have had to sell off, especially in the Tule Lake Basin. But what was interesting in his discussion, and he showed the topographical maps and showed the drainage in that area, what happened is when they put in that reclamation project to turn those two basins that were essentially evaporation ponds, when they put that in place with the Klamath Lake to regulate the water flow and mm-hmm. dams, they were able to farm those two basins, Tule Lake in California and Klamath Basin, the lower Klamath Basin in Oregon, and they were able to do that and actually send an additional 400,000 acre-feet of water into the Klamath River that the Klamath River never saw because it went into these basins and evaporated.
Right.
And that's just like key information that was never brought out. And recently, this shows you how people and how the media twists the stories as things develop. But the middle end of September, there was a die-off of salmon at the mouth of the Klamath River in Oregon, which is 200 miles from the Klamath Basin.
Mm-hmm.
And in the article that I saw in the LA Times, they first of all they linked it to the Klamath Basin irrigation projects, and they said that water was cut off because of the endangered coho salmon, which had nothing to do with the original reason why that water was cut off. But they just linked it together, and they said that some believe that there's some connection to that water project in the Klamath to what was going on at the mouth of the Klamath River, where maybe as many as 10 or 15,000 salmon died off due to overcrowding.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also, in the same article, mentioned that the year previous they counted over or up close to 200,000 salmon going up the Klamath. So anyway, it was interesting to hear some of these more recent nuggets of truth and information about the whole Klamath Basin situation. And I was wondering if you'd come across any additional info about that.
Well, I have friends up there, you know, that's an interesting article that you just talked about, but that's still under investigation. But the fish...
About the salmon die-off?
Yes, right.
Yeah, it was overcrowding.
Yeah. There were so many. And so they make a very negative report. And that's the balance of nature, what's happening.
Sure.
They're very concerned. First of all, you spoke about the fertilizers business going down. What was it?
Oh, yeah.
75%.
Yeah, he survived, but that was
right.
Imagine.
Well, that's in the biodiversity assessment report. They really don't want to use fertilizer.
Or herbicides or anything that will really increase production because they want shortages of food. As incredible as that may seem. They want to turn back the hands of the clock to before the agricultural revolution.
And also, amazing.
And also, the latest report up there is they want to introduce wolves up there. And the farmers are not pleased at all. So they're attacking them on all sides, the water issue, and now bringing in the wolves, which will attack cattle and sheep and lambs and so forth. So they still have a battle going up there in Klamath Basin.
Yeah.
But it's really, Rory, what they want to do is get that land away from the people, and they're using the environment and the endangered sucker fish. They're using all these things as an explanation, but that really has nothing to do with it any more than the spotted owl had anything to do with shutting down the lumbering. They wanted to shut down the lumbering, and they use that as a justification.
That's right. In fact, we heard you did an interview with a gentleman that said that what's the name of that nonprofit land?
Farmland Trust?
No.
Nature Conservancy?
The Nature Conservancy was going around trying to buy up those distressed acreage in those two basins.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, they were lobbying Congress for funds to buy distressed properties at 25% of the value.
But, of course, they were the ones that it was distressed. They were the ones who created the distress. Hey, anything else, Rory?
That was it. But just people remember that irrigation reclamation district up there nets the Klamath River 400,000 acre-feet of water a year that the Klamath River didn't have prior to that reclamation project. Okay. And that needs to be told.
Yeah, thanks for that information.
Thank you. Thanks, Rory.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we've got Michael calling from Spokane. Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you. And I'm very much enjoying your show tonight. It's very good to be hearing straight talk about the difficult issues that face us. And as strange as it may seem, we are looking at what is nothing less than a concerted effort to peel back the ability of people to care for themselves.
Absolutely. Make everybody depend upon the state as they would be under any feudal lord.
That's right. And recently there have been some really troubling news out of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and the USDA, Department of Agriculture, where the U.S. has taken out patents on what is called Terminator technology.
You are going to have to hang on. Will you hang on during our three-minute break? And we'll be right back with Michael here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and this is the time when we have to remind all of you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who are listening to help us as we try to reach out across America from sea to shining sea. And right now we're up to almost 50 stations that are hearing us every week. But of course, we frankly need your help to continue doing what we're doing and to expand our coverage across the nation and really across the world, because 5 hours a day by the miracle of radio, 5 hours a day on the internet, 3 hours a day on satellite, 2 hours a day on shortwave, we do have a voice. And when you join the Radio Liberty family, you become part of that voice. So if you'd like to partner with us in our effort to educate the American people, please give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And for more information on that, if you'd like to reach us, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, let me tell you, if you want the additional information, if you perhaps only can hear us 1 hour a day, if you go to our website at radioliberty.com, we have many archived programs there. Then you can pull those down. And, of course, fascinating discussions. And, of course, if you want to listen to live programs, why, there are links to the American Freedom Network, a way to get to the Genesis Network, so you can hear our other programs earlier in the day. That's at radioliberty.com. Our newsletters are posted up there, and please tell other people about our programs and encourage them to listen. Then, of course, I want to mention the program we're going to be putting on at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course on the 23rd of November. And first, we're going to have Jeannie Soderman as a speaker. Jeannie is certainly the most informed person on this local Agenda 21. Joan Paris will be there talking about the international efforts. And she, of course, attended the Johannesburg meeting, and she's in almost a first name basis with Stephen Rockefeller and many of these other people that are involved in this whole plan to enslave the earth. And this is really what it's all about, the reinstitution of a world feudalistic system under the new feudal lords, at least for those who are allowed to survive. Then we're going to have, of course, Bill Sardi will be there, Brad Dacus. I'll be talking on the financial crisis that is imminent, is coming, that will destroy the wealth of most of the people in this country, will destroy the wealth of the middle class. And if you play the game as you have in the past, you are assured that you are going to lose most of what you have in your savings for your retirement, as they have in Argentina, as they are at the present time doing in Brazil, as they have done in other countries during this last decade, as they did in Mexico a decade ago, where they simply wiped out the wealth of the middle class. And this is going to happen here in America. And so we're going to talk about preparation for that and the difficult times that lay ahead, and for the possibility of a biological attack, because they're doing everything they can to tell us there's going to be one. They're planning on one. If you don't believe that, read, and we'll have with us New World Coming report put out by 12 CFR members in 1999, telling about the coming biological attacks on America. So everything is pretty well scripted. Now, we hope that many of you will come to this meeting. It's going to be all day, starting at 8:45 in the morning. Doors will open at 8:00, close at 6:00. And of course, there's going to be a luncheon. There'll be syllabuses with all sorts of fascinating information. But we really need to know if you are interested in coming so we can make our preparations. So we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV, war. And Mary, I should tell you the details about what the program will be. And remember, that's the 23rd, and we hope that you and many of your friends will be able to come. And hope to see you there. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and we've got Michael up there in Spokane. Michael, go ahead with what you were saying.
Yes, I was trying to point out that recently there's been some new developments along the lines of the government actually moving in a direction that looks as if they're trying to take away people's ability to feed themselves, in that the U.S. government has actually taken out patents, which is strange enough by itself, but the patents are with what they call Terminator technology. It's in combination with Monsanto Corporation, genetically modified food that grows well in one generation, but the seeds are not viable.
Right.
Meaning that you have to continually buy the seeds again and again and again. You cannot withhold seeds like farming has been done throughout all generations, and then the farmer actually plants his own seeds. He has to keep coming back to Monsanto to buy the seeds again and again and again. And there's obviously, it's a conspiracy. There's nothing less than that to make everyone dependent for their very food on a daily basis for just to live. And it's terrible. And I have a quote from John Eichert, who is the professor emeritus at the University of Missouri. He's a keynote speaker at a symposium that's coming up here this November 8th in Yakima, Washington. And his speech is called The Family Farm on the Cutting Edge. And he says, today, American agriculture is confronted with a new challenge, the long-run food security of the nation. The nation's food supply may soon be controlled by a handful of multinational corporations, not by American farmers. And we may be as dependent on the rest of the world for our food as we are today for our oil.
And of course, the same thing is happening with water.
That's right.
They want to control our water. In fact, they're having a big corporation coming into our county from Germany to buy up the water rights up in the San Lorenzo Valley. So control the food, control the water, control the population. I share your concern, and thank you so very much for calling, Michael.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Thank you now. Bye.
What do you think about what Michael was saying there, Ginny?
Well, that's an example of a public-private partnership, and it's the government partnering with the big corporations, Monsanto. I'm very familiar with that particular subject that Michael talked about. And there was just an article in the paper how the corn was being corrupted in Mexico with Monsanto. Because what happens when you plant these genetically altered seeds, and they grow, of course, they blow in the wind after the crop is over, and they do go onto other people's lands. In fact, there's a big court case now in Canada regarding a farmer that Monsanto has said that he has used their seeds, and they are protected through patent. And he says, no, I did not buy your seeds. And evidently, the seeds just blew into his land adjacent to where they were planting the genetically altered seeds from Monsanto. So it's a big court case in Canada. But here again, they are after the small farmer. And this is where we go into corporate socialism, very definitely.
And that's really what it's really all about. I mean, it's this idea of the all-powerful elite. And, of course, somebody wrote a book about when the corporations rule the world, and the elite, the corporations, and the bankers all merge together. Because, of course, and behind that are spiritual forces. And unless you understand that, that many people of great wealth have their wealth because they've sold their souls to the prince of this world.
Well, if you go into Central and South America, to have a good business and also to run for president or any office, you must be a Mason.
Isn't that interesting? And so the Masons are down there as well.
Oh, yes. And they're very open about speaking about it. It's not like here in the United States. It's very open in the third world countries regarding the Masons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they've permeated every aspect of the world. And, of course, behind that is the fraternity within the outer fraternity. And many of the Masons, of course, are good people, but they don't understand that there is an inner fraternity. And, of course, all you need to do is read the writings of Manly P. Hall, who, when he died, was cited in the Scottish Rite magazine as the most important occult writer, or important Masonic writer of all time. And in his book, The Lectures on Ancient Philosophy, he talks about the fraternity within the fraternity. And it is that fraternity that rules the world, that rules the people who rule the world, as I should say.
Well, going back, Dr. Stan, to water, especially the World Bank water policy. Will that be in the syllabus?
Yes, we're going to put the World Bank water policy and the Earth Charter. Both are such important documents, and so they will be available to the people who attend the conference.
Well, this is important because in the World Bank water policy, they talk about they want to do away with the federal structure of countries, and that is replacing all country and state political boundaries with geographical river basin boundaries. Once they do that, they have restructured our Constitution. We don't have a Constitution anymore, because the Constitution was based on the sovereign boundaries of states.
And that's why they're letting the immigrants come in. That's why George Bush wants to make all these illegal immigrants here legally. He knows exactly what he's doing. He just doesn't want the foolish people who believe he is what he says he is to understand that his allegiance is not to America, but to this internationalist dream.
Well, I see no difference between Clinton and Bush. They are going along the same party line. So it's Socialist Party A and Socialist Party B. On the watersheds, a watershed is defined the land area that drains water to a body of water, say a stream, a river, a lake, or ocean. And it gradually, like here in Santa Cruz County, The water comes from the top of the Santa Cruz Mountains down through the streams and into Monterey Bay. And we have about 11 streams that are big enough classified as important going into Monterey Bay. Now, watershed commissions are very important. And I just read the latest newsletter of Joel Skousen, and I would encourage anyone that wants to know what's happening in the world politically, militarily, in the intelligence circles, domestically. He is right on, especially as I travel through Central and South America. He is one of the few that I really trust to get out credible news, what's happening throughout the world. And so there again, you can go into his website, www.joelskousen.com. And it's an extremely interesting website. And also his news brief that he puts out on email once a week is well worth it. So here again is these watersheds. And I found it when I was going to the Gaia conference in Santa Cruz about a month and a half ago. I was thinking, how does this tie in internationally? And there was a paper on the local Santa Cruz Environmental Council. And it talked about this Gaia conference. They were going to have annual conferences from now on. And it was going to be called State of the Region Conferences. And I thought, well, boy, that sounds almost like State of the World Forum, who Mikhail Gorbachev heads. And I was right. As I read the next few sentences, it says, we will align with the State of the World Forum annual conferences. So here again, the local conferences, the Gaia Conference, which is put on by the Environmental Council of Santa Cruz, will partner with the International State of the World Forum, which is headed by Mikhail Gorbachev. The paper also said that they're going to start a pilot program here in Santa Cruz County. And the Environmental Council of Santa Cruz, they were going to start a sustainable community, and they are going to develop 10 acres of real estate. It's down near Natural Bridges. That's where the, I'm thinking of the laboratory for fish are down there, Dr. Stan. I forget the name of it, but that's associated with UCSC and Moss Landing. And so they're going to have 10 acres. It's going to be a multi-million dollar project. And they say it's going to take at least 10 years to accomplish this. But this will be our first pilot program of a sustainable community.
Where people actually live there, and mm-hmm. it will be self-sustaining, and they'll grow their own food and
right.
And produce everything they need locally.
Right.
And that, isn't that wonderful? And then you really won't even have to travel very far. You can just sort of stay right there. And that's what this whole thing is. They want total control. They'll have you there. They can watch you. They can monitor you. They know everything about you, everything you think, everything you say. It'll all be recorded.
It'll be very well connected with UCSC. What they were talking about is there'll be a lot of scientists down there, a lot of students doing research in the marine research.
Oh, no, this
lab.
Is not a sustainable community then. This is a laboratory?
No, it will be a sustainable
okay.
community,
okay.
but part of it will be the laboratory.
Oh, I see, okay.
Yeah. And that will be included in the 10-acre site. So there again, every community does have an environmental council. And the environmental council is one of the organizations that wrote Santa Cruz Local Agenda 21. And I have to digress a little bit back to ICLE, which was the local council, International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. That is the group, Dr. Stan, that wrote the Local Agenda 21 Planning Guide that was given to all the elected officials and bureaucrats here in Santa Cruz County. And this is how they developed the Local Agenda plan from this particular manual that came from Canada.
Okay.
So ICLE is very, very important. They are mandating everything to the local bureaucrats. Now, I read Joel Skousen's latest intelligence report, and there is something that really hit home to me. He says, when you get on a commission or a city council, if you try to feel what is right, who will override you and pushing the international agenda are the local lawyers, like the county attorneys, the city attorney especially. They are the ones that overrule anything that they feel is constitutionally correct. And so the local city lawyers and the county lawyers are now implementing international law. So they're the ones to watch, especially because I've seen them work in Watsonville in Santa Cruz County. So it's really hard to be on a commission now because it has gone so far. What we need to do is educate the people and the blueprint so they understand the blueprint. And this is what happens when you get appointed for a commission. It is kind of a prestige commission, and they use the Delphi technique, which has been researched and developed by the think tanks. And so I've seen it happen in the Corralitos plan, the village plan, where they work together for a couple years, and it's a deep bond between, say, 12 or 13 members on that commission. And it's teamwork, and they don't want to go out of that box to be individual. They want to keep peace within that team, within that commission. And the Delphi technique does work if you don't understand how they're manipulating your mind.
And that's really what it's all about. They are such experts at manipulating our minds through the media, you know, through radio, through television, through books, through the educational system. And of course, this applies even onto these boards people are getting onto, doesn't it?
It applies so much because the commissions will, they think it's their ideas, and say like the Water Advisory Commission, they think they come up with all these wonderful ideas, and they recommend all these regulations to the Board of Supervisors, or you might have a Board of Commissioners in your area. But really, they're being manipulated, and they don't understand it. It is mind control,
sure.
Very definitely. The latest on Santa Cruz County is the city wants to implement the citywide creeks and wetlands management plan.
And I suppose similar things are happening all across the country.
All across the world, okay. Dr. Stan.
Explain to us what's happening locally so people can understand this is going to be happening in their area sooner or later.
Any stream that comes through your property, it could be flowing throughout the total year, or it could be dry for part of the year. But this is a stream that they want to, the local government, are going to have buffer zones on each side of the stream. It could be a couple feet up to, could be several miles. But here again, this ties into international treaties because we go to the national where Al Gore created this Clean Water Initiative Act, meaning he wanted over how many million miles of river, 25,000 miles of corridors that lie within federal lands, but also 2 million miles of corridors that will be on private lands. So the National Clean Water Initiative ties in with the county citywide creeks and wetlands management plan. But this goes even higher. This goes up into the international treaties, like the Wetland Treaty and the Biodiversity Treaty. So everything that's being done nationally and locally in the state, in the county, they are tying everything in to correspond with the international treaties. And this is why throughout the United States, every county, every city is coming up with a new general plan. The general plan is important because they have to have all the urban growth boundaries within that general plan. And this corresponds to where they're going to be building and not go outside the sustainable communities line. And there'll be a buffer zone and a green belt around that city. We are complete in Santa Cruz City now. We have a green belt all the way around the city. And we are in Santa Cruz County, an active wildlands project. It's called Ventana Wildlands Project. And I have seen papers where they want to introduce bear and grizzlies. Now, grizzlies are very, very difficult to kill because you just a regular a 45, it just bounces off their skin. You've got to have a real high-powered bullet to kill a grizzly. And so we're going to have grizzlies, they want, up in Santa Cruz Mountains. And these will be the corridors where they want to take the people out of the mountains, either like in Florida, they want to flood them out in Miami-Dade County.
Either that or they have to leave because of the alligators, because the gators.
Yes, get them. Or they want to burn them out. Or if we have earthquakes, anything that will destroy your home, and then you will have a difficult time rebuilding your home again.
Well, let's quickly go to Gloria, who's up there in Spokane. Hi, Gloria. How are you doing?
Hi. I'm enjoying your speaker. I just wanted to say that I see a great parallel between what's happening in this environmentalist movement and how it's really international in scope and how they brought in the Delphi technique for education reform and, you know, tried to fool the parents into thinking that everything was, you know, the parents came up with the ideas themselves or the local people, the local folks, but they just Delphi'd everything, and really it was international. I mean, it's becoming pretty apparent that that's what's really going on.
Yeah, the Delphi is they try to avoid debate. And so you have to get along with everyone. And if you try to debate an issue, then you're kind of ostracized.
And they demonize you and they mm-hmm. ostracize you and they lie and they ridicule you. I've been there, you know.
Yeah.
What do you mean? You try to tell the truth. And, of course, usually the speaker, everybody identifies with him rather than the person who's raising the question, why are you doing what you're doing? You try to point out what they're doing, they'll just silence you. But you're going to have to keep speaking up, Gloria, and I'm sure you do.
Well, we have John Leffler will be our speaker at Spokane College Women in November, speaking about consensus and the Delphi technique and to inform people about what's really going on. So we're really fortunate to have him.
You sure are. Well, of course, John Leffler is one of the finest speakers, mm-hmm. and he happens to be a personal friend.
Mm-hmm.
Second
okay,
to Dr. Stan.
Well, thank you.
God bless
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Gloria.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, we're sort of drawing to an end here. Do you have about a 30-second wrap-up for us, Jeannie, for our listeners up there in the Great Northwest?
Well, don't stop speaking out. Just speak out what you feel is right. And that's the most important thing because they cannot silence truth. And there was a saying that I saw that fits very good with people that don't want to know what's happening. The hardest thing to learn is something you'd rather not know. But let's speak out. Let's speak the truth. And we know we're doing right.
And remember that men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. If you think that freedom is free, well, you're sadly mistaken. There are people who are intent upon taking it, a long-range planning, and behind that, the dark spiritual forces that we so often refer to and certainly are laid out in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You certainly should think very seriously if you're getting the Sustainable Development Syllabus, which does contain the World Bank Water Policy, the Earth Charter, and so much more. If any of you can get down to our conference on the 23rd of November, I want to send a representative down if you can. Until I guess it'll be tomorrow evening at the same time. But this is Dr. Stan asking you to pray for America, pray for revival, but please remember to pray for our ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And we'll be back with you tomorrow at the same time. Until then, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king, but in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. And, of course, we'll welcome your calls a little bit later. But right now we have with us Paul and Lorraine Walters. Walter, we're going to be talking about the book that they have republished. It's called The Coming Battle. Now, this book was published in 1899. It's over 103 years old. But it's vitally important that you understand what was written in 1899 by Mr. Wahlberg, because, of course, it reflects on exactly what's going on today. Paul, are you there?
Yes, I am. And I apologize that Lorraine isn't here because we have a little granddaughter with us here, and she hasn't fallen asleep yet, so it'll be just me.
All right, fine. Well, I'm just going to let you take off and explain to our listeners why you would publish a book that's 103 years old and why you think it's so important today.
Well, because I was born in communist Yugoslavia, immigrated to the United States in 1959, and I was at awe that the country exists, that you can switch jobs, you can be anything you want to be. All you have to do is work hard and be honest and save your money, and the sky is the limit. I never seen such things where I came from, because in the communist country that I came from, the government turned its children against the parents. They told us certain things that we have to turn our parents in for this and that reason, and it was a total insane asylum. So my father escaped to America, and I saw about 15 years ago, I guess, or maybe a little bit longer, I saw America slipping into socialism, and I realized that Americans don't really know much about socialism. You know, they were freedom here since 1776, basically, and they've never lived under tyranny, under fascism, or under communism. So Americans, I realize, are easily manipulated and duped into believing certain things. So when I got a hold of The Coming Battle, I realized this information, this book contains a lot of information that was hidden from the American people. So when I read this, I started understanding where a lot of our problems came from, because it's very simple. Mr. Walbert documents things, you know, how with taxation, anyone who has the power to tax you has the power to destroy you, and so on and so forth. So I realized that this information needs to get into the hands of the American people. So I decided, my wife and I, we raised about $15,000 or $20,000 and published a book and put it out in hardcover. It took us about 6 months to do this because it's a very thick book. We have to type the whole thing into the computer and proofread it 3 times, and, you know, it's a lot of work. And so here it is. It's out for public to read. Basically, what the book contains, Mr. Walbert, the reason Mr. Walbert calls the book The Coming Battle is because he realized that the people who control your money will eventually get so powerful that they're going to take away your freedom. They're going to basically, Mr. Walbert predicts, a time will come in America that the country that your founding fathers conquered, that people wake up homeless on the very continent that the founding fathers have conquered, and the people who are behind it are your bankers, so to speak. And he wanted to warn the American people, stuck his neck out, I'm sure. And so we decided to republish this, and now we're in our fifth printing.
All right, fine. And, of course, really, Mr. Walberg had lived through so many of the events of the 19th century, when time and again the bankers, this small group of very wealthy people, had expanded the monetary supply and created a tremendous bubble, as it were, of prosperity. The stock market boomed. Everybody had a job. Everybody was building. Everybody was optimistic. And then they contracted the economy and made a shortage of money. And by so doing, and since they controlled the volume of money and the flow of money, then they were ever able to close down industries, throw people out of work, seize their farms and seize their property, and, of course, wait until, the whole system had ground to a stop, and then start in all over again. It's sort of like a game they play where property passes from weak hands to strong hands, and the labor and effort of so many hardworking people can be exploited for the benefit of the few.
Well, Mr. Walbert talks about how farms were foreclosed back in the 1800s, and how they, the bankers, the people who control the money, he calls them the money power, how they manipulated the commodities market, how farmers were barely making ends meet, and how farmers went into the bank to borrow money for seeds and farm equipment and such, and then they manipulated the commodities market so the farmer barely made ends meet. They watched the trends of how the person borrowing the money, the farmer, made his payments, and as they saw that he was struggling to make payments, that's when they came in and foreclosed on the farm. So they manipulated the economy so people barely made it. And it's all documented. It's nothing new under the sun. It's been going on in the 1800s, and it's still going on today. The only difference is today, instead of being just print media that we had in the 1800s, today they have computers and modern technology, and, you know, they can brainwash and manipulate you through the TV, and they have, you know, mastered the art of brainwashing down to a science, and they're exercising it on it, and most American people are still asleep. Of course, your audience is awake, I'm sure, but for the most part, they're still asleep. They haven't got a clue of what really is happening to them, because I remember in the 60s, it used to be that my dad used to just go to work and he made enough to feed the family. And then started to where the wife has to go to work to make ends meet. And then the children became the latchkey kids. And then the state came in, you know, and the schools start brainwashing children. So the whole thing is like an agenda and escalates. And it's done right in front of the noses of the American people. And the poor folks, you know, they don't know what's happening to them because it's done so subtly.
Well, you know, of course, what's really so interesting is that there are many people who at the beginning of the 1900s recognized this power, this misuse of power of the banking cartel, and it was a banking cartel that worked as a unit, and so they wanted this solution so the banks could not manipulate the people. Certainly, William Jennings Bryan ran for president three times as the Democrat presidential candidate under the proposition people should not be crucified on a cross of gold, or our economy crucified. I don't probably remember the exact terminology he used, but
no, you're right. That's it.
They wanted to have money based upon silver as well, so that the bankers could not control the flow of money. Well, then of course the bankers, realizing that something would be done that would circumvent their power. They went off to a meeting at Jekyll Island in about 1909, 1910, a secret meeting where you had Senator Nelson Aldrich, who, of course, was the maternal grandfather of Nelson Aldrich Rockefeller, and you had the representative of the Rockefeller Bank, you had Frederick Vanderlip, you had Paul Warburg, you had a congressman, Senator Glass, I've forgotten who all the people were who were there, but it was a conspiracy at Jekyll Island to come up with a system, and they decided to call it the Federal Reserve System. It was basically the bank, a privately owned central bank that would do exactly what the people feared the most. But the people had to be told one thing. Oh, this is how we're going to control these wicked bankers. And actually, it was a system that the bankers put forward, to control the people. It's sort of like, you know, when the mafia takes over the local government, and or they say, you know, we're gonna organize the government to take care of the wicked mafia, and it's actually the mafia that's doing it. So this is what the central bankers did, and they sold it to the American people. And to this very day, most Americans honestly believe that the Federal Reserve System is a federal government agency. They don't recognize it's a privately owned central bank that works with all the other central banks of the world, intent upon creating a world feudalistic system under their control.
You know, Henry Ford understood this, and he said something on the order of, if the people ever woke up and realized what happened to them, it'd be a revolution overnight, because he understood the power that these central bankers have. See, you cannot have a global government and a new world order, which is really nothing more than the old world order renamed, and control the whole world. You need power, and you need influence, and you need control, and that's done through the money. Because they control not just the money in the United States, but they control the world's money and world economy, and they're the ones that are behind this. And, you know, it's very difficult to wake people up because the money that they make works. It buys them a car, it buys them this and buys them that. And as long as it buys them their comforts, you see, they don't question much.
Well, people don't want to hear bad news. I think they've been drinking too much fluoridated water myself. And incidentally, I don't say that lightheartedly. Actually, there are studies that show a definite relationship between your mental capacity and drinking fluoridated water. In fact, studies out of China show that children in areas where the water is fluoridated would lose 10 to 15 points in their IQ. And, of course, the active ingredient in Prozac is fluoride, fluoride compound. And in fact, we're even talking now about putting Prozac in our water so people won't be so apprehensive. Beg pardon?
I said, that's one thing I didn't know, that fluoride is an active ingredient in Prozac. I didn't know that.
Well, there's so many. It really does have an effect on the mind. But that's neither here nor there. We're talking now about the banking system. And so what did Mr. Wahlberg suggest needed to be done, and why did he feel there was a coming battle in 1899?
Well, because, see, what he named, I think, is about 8 or 10 banks. They were on the East Coast, like Chase Bank and Galician, Hanover. He names them all. They're all in the coming battle book. That he knew that they were consolidating the power, because Andrew Jackson really did a number on them. And Andrew Jackson, in my opinion, is one of the best presidents we had, because he understood the dangers of these people, and their ultimate gain is to basically put a noose around every American citizen. He understood that, so he wouldn't renew their second banking charter, and he set them back quite a bit. In fact, he set them back so much that it took them about 40, 50 years before they started recovering, and they really didn't recover fully until President Grant's era, because President Grant signed a bill called an Act to Strengthen Public Credit, and that's really when they started consolidating, because President Grant was their president. He was firmly in their pocket, bought and paid for. So the reason they passed this bill, an Act to Strengthen Public Credit, back in 73, I believe it was, because what it did is it pledged every American citizen as collateral for a national debt, because as the bankers lend money to the federal government so the federal government can run its operation, they wanted this paid back with interest. Well, the federal government didn't have much wealth at the time. The only thing they had is District of Columbia, and you know, most of the wealth was concentrated in the respective states and its people. So they passed this bill, an Act to Strengthen Public Credit, pledging your wealth, your property, and your wealth, anything that you own, as a collateral for national debt. And the coming battle documents how Andrew Jackson believed that the generation who creates the debt should be the generation who pays it off, so we don't pass it on to our future generation. In other words, we don't indenture our children. So they actually passed a piece of legislation that Pig Iron Kelly did to roll the debt over from generation to generation. This happened after Andrew Jackson's death, of course, because they believed that a national debt is a national blessing. In other words, the bigger the debt is, the more blessed we are. And I couldn't figure this screwy philosophy out for a long time, and then I finally figured it out, that the blessing is on them, not on us. So, you know, and Thomas Jefferson believed the same thing. And the blessing is, you know, if I have the money and I'll lend it to you and you'd have to pay it back, and if you don't pay it back, I'll take your wealth, well, the blessing is on me. It certainly isn't on you. So that's why they said a national debt is a national blessing. And they actually did away with that law that Andrew Jackson did, and they've been rolling the debt over ever since. And today you see, I don't know, it takes, what, $75,000 for every man, woman, and child to pay the national debt off. It's so big, and with this war on terror, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And one day I was in San Diego visiting a friend about a few years back, and I picked up San Diego Union, and guess what was in there? There was a cartoon in there with a house of cards and a huge boulder on top of those house of cards, and it says the economy. And you know, that is, I've never forgotten that, because that describes it well. And basically what that cartoon says, that one day the whole house of cards will come tumbling down. And when it's, you know, when it's going to happen, I don't know, but I can see that it's going to happen, because it can't continue the way it's going. The whole thing is going to collapse.
Well, of course, it's really a confidence game. As long as people have confidence in the dollar, as long as everybody else in the world is willing to accept worthless paper dollars with nothing behind them, then the game continues on. But if other countries suddenly say, well, we really don't have confidence in the dollar anymore, we don't have confidence in the American economy, there's civil unrest there. They have nothing behind their money. We don't like what they're doing over in the Middle East. Why they're even talking among the Arabs that they'll want some sort of a gold-backed currency in payment for their oil. Why should they take a worthless American dollars, especially now when people are talking about suing Saudi Arabia for $1 trillion just because they backed Al-Qaeda and 15 of the 19 terrorists were Saudi Arabians, and that's why our government is frantically trying to keep that lawsuit from being invoked, because if Saudi Arabia and the other wealthy oil states at one time said, we will not accept the American dollar in exchange for our currency, the whole house of cards begins to come down, because there is nothing behind the money. This is what people don't understand. At one time, the dollar bill had written on it, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private, and is redeemable in lawful currency at any branch of the U.S. Treasury or at any Federal Reserve Bank. It is redeemable in lawful currency. And then one day, just as in 1984, when the pigs looked at the sign that used to say, all animals are equal, and then, of course, one day they looked at the sign and said, well, all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. So it was that one day I picked up the dollar bill, and it said, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private, period. No fanfare, nothing was said. They simply changed the fact that we had a currency backed by something to a currency backed by absolutely nothing. And it works fine until people suddenly one day wake up and understand that they've got all this paper and it isn't worth the paper it's written on.
But then it'd be too late, you see.
Right, and of course, as somebody once said, only governments can take something valuable like paper and put red ink on it, blue ink, or red or blue ink on it, and make it become worthless. And, of course, we've got countless trillions of dollars, probably 60, 70 trillion dollars out there in dollars, and there's nothing behind them. It's based upon $660 billion that we supposedly have in circulation in this country, and behind that, there's absolutely nothing. There is no gold behind it. I think we have something like $11 billion of gold behind this whole massive currency bubble made up of countless billions and billions and billions and billions, trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. So why don't you pick up and tell us a little bit more of what Mr. Wahlberg said?
Well, Mr. Wahlberg understood the dangers of issuing and giving the control of your money over to a private corporation that eventually will result in the oppression of the American people. And he was an attorney, he was an insider, obviously had information that most people, and access to certain information that most people didn't. He understood that and stuck his neck out. One of the decent attorneys, obviously back, and it's a little bit different today, of course, still. I don't think we have an attorney today that'll put a book like that out. But in those days, Mr. Wahlberg did. And I'll tell you, I got a feeling this book was suppressed because, to my knowledge, there's only 3 original copies, and I have one of them. And the other 2 are, one is in Oklahoma University Library, and one is in the East Coast. And they won't let the book out of their sight. All the radio shows that we do around the country and all the shows you did on the Coming Battle, no one has ever called you and said, hey, I got an old copy in my attic that was passed down, from my grandparents. So obviously this book was suppressed. So I would suggest that, as people pick it up, get it from you and read it so they can understand how this country was set up, because you can't make a difference unless you understand where the problems came from. You see, the only thing you're doing, you think is this and you think is that, but, you can't.
Well, of course, they've done everything they could through the years to conceal the truth from the American people. There was a lady named Gertrude Coogan who wrote a book on money creators, I think was the title of it. And, she was writing back in the 1930s. The book I have was written in 1935. And she really understood this whole scam of money. So a group of very prominent people came to her. They said they would like her to really put together an excellent book that would cover the whole history of money and all the things. And so she did. She spent, they gave her, a fairly substantial sum of money to write this rather extensive book on money, its creation, how it worked, how this whole scam worked. And, of course, she eventually gave them the manuscript. Met with these prominent leaders and said, now when will it be published? And they smiled and they said, never. They paid her off, they had the manuscript, and they had no intention of publishing it. Could that sort of thing happen in America? Absolutely. It happens all the time. And the fact that most people don't understand that many books are actively suppressed in America, or many television stories are spiked, they're never allowed to be put on. Anybody who doubts that needs to get that book, Into the Buzzsaw, written by Christine Borgeson, who is actually a Emmy-winning award winner for CBS. She was a television producer and very, very successful until she tried to get the truth out about TWA 800. And then she went into the buzzsaw. Well, the same thing is true with this book. And it's a fascinating, fascinating insight into what had happened during the 19th century and Mr. Wahlberg's view that there was going to come a battle between the banks and individual freedom. And either the banks would succeed and we would be enslaved, or the people would succeed, and there would be continued freedom in our country.
Well, you know, let me read something real quick that's on page 38, 39. In a great case before the highest tribunal of the nation, Justice Samuel F. Miller, can you imagine justices in those days talking like this? Can you imagine having those justices today? The power of taxation is a power to destroy. That's what Justice Samuel F. Miller said. No man who is endowed with a modicum of intelligence would advocate a transfer of this immense power to a private corporation for its gain. It would amount to self-destruction of a nation. No sane man would advocate the delegation of this high attribute of sovereignty to a corporation for its individual gain, as such transfer of power would inevitably result in frightful oppression. Do you see that coming? Absolutely.
Amen to that. What if you're out there in the listening audience and you agree or disagree? Give us a call. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And there's really nothing new under the sun. It's been going on for a long time. But, of course, never before have the bankers had the control that they have today, because every nation in the world has a central bank. And all these central banks work in concert through the Bank of International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland. And, of course, in fact, it's very interesting that the building there is shaped like a boot. And you remember that statement in George Orwell's 1984, when, of course, O'Brien is talking to Winston Smith, O'Brien being the representative of Big Brother, and describes socialism as a boot stamping on a human face forever. But of course, all the central banks work together in concert, and they manipulate the currencies of their nation. And as Professor Quigley says on page 324 of his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, they work together, they have secret meetings, and their ultimate plan is to create a feudal society under their control, a world feudal society. And that's really what it's all about. Control the currency, and you control the people, you control the wealth, you control the governments, you control the education, you control the corporations, you control everything.
You know, you have to think about this, Stan. An average person would, you know, an average person out there, I'm asking this for an average person out there, would you have any respect for someone that you can manipulate and walk all over them and make fools out of them, and they tell them a lie and they believe you? I wouldn't have any respect for a person like this. And that's why they have no respect for us, because we're so easily manipulated. And, of course, the ones that are awake, they hate you as well, but at least they have respect for you because they know that they can't pull the wool over your eyes. And I've noticed that same thing in local politics here. You know, I'm very vocal, and I'm not afraid to get in these people's faces. And I stand up, and I tell them, you know, when they do something wrong, what I think of them and where they're deceiving the public. And they look at me with a little chuckle in the face, and, you know, I can understand they don't like me at all, but they have respect for me. And it's the same thing, you know, with the people. We have to stand up to these people as best way we know how. And I always tell everyone the way you make change in this country is to get involved and get elected in local level, county commissioners or city council, and make a difference there, and then from there it'll spread to the next county and the next county, and next thing you know, it'll spread to the state and we can take the country back. That's the only way to do it. The problem is, you see, when a lot of decent people go in office, they don't understand how the game is being played. That's one of the reasons why the coming battle is very good, because it tells you how the game is being played and how bills go through different committees and how people lie to and how this and that is done. And then what they do is they get in office, and a few months later they're just the opposite. And they don't keep their promises, and they do exactly the opposite of what they promised they are going to do. And they finally realize what they do consensus with these people. They get into these committees and they do consensus, and they're told this and they told that, and they believe it. And all of a sudden, they're not the same person anymore. And what we need is men and women that will go into office and not do consensus and stand firm by the convictions and make a difference. And believe me, you can make a difference.
I'm sure you can. Well, let's go to Mike calling in here from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. When you talk about the Federal Reserve being privately held corporation,
right?
Who exactly is that that holds that corporation?
Well, the central banks. Basically, the Federal Reserve System is a corporation that is owned, the stock of it is owned by the banks of the United States. And certainly banks hold the majority of the stock. Do you understand what I'm saying? The banks of the United States hold the stock to the Federal Reserve System.
Well,
you and I can't own stock in the Federal Reserve. Only the banks can.
So
the banks own.
Can you name some individuals?
What's that?
Can you name some individuals?
No. It's the banks that own it. The banks own the stock.
Which banks?
Manhattan Bank, Hanover Bank, Bank of America. All the major banks, at least, were around in 1913, own stock in the Federal Reserve System.
Bank of America is the Bank of Italy.
All right, it was the Bank of Italy in those days.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, that's actually how it works. It's a privately owned central bank, and it's owned by the bankers. Now, people will tell you, well, there's the Class A stock, and it's all owned by European bankers, and they all have Jewish names. I've never been able to verify that at all. I don't think it's true. I think that if you try to document that, you can't do it. You'll find that there's a man named Eustace Mullins who's written that, and he can't, to my satisfaction, document that either. So, and we don't need to have, a group of Jewish bankers owning it. It's bad enough having a group of American banks own it, and those banks are owned by people of great wealth. For instance, we had the Rockefellers controlling at one time both Citibank and Chase Manhattan Bank, the two single largest banks in the United States, and they interlocked with Hanover and Chemical Bank and the others. Okay, anything else?
That's it, thanks.
Okay, thanks so much.
Okay.
And, of course, we have a lot of books written on banking. Anybody wants to get into that, certainly the Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton. But from a historical point of view, the book we're talking about this evening, The Coming Battle, gives you tremendous insight into the history of this whole scam that is now, at this point in history, is beginning to contract the money supply. Actually, they're still pumping the money out, but the next move is going to be to cut the interest rate even further, to do anything they possibly can to try to prevent this whole thing from collapsing. And they have not dramatically decreased the money supply. They've been increasing the money supply at 10% a year, and, of course, the only thing that's kept us from runaway inflation has been the fourth point that we've been exporting our inflation to other countries. We're going to be back here in just 3 minutes, and we'll talk to our caller on the line and carry on our conversation with Paul Walter, the book, why it's entitled The Coming Battle. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our program to help us do what we do 5 hours every day. And starting at 7 o'clock in the morning, and then, for 4 more hours, we reach out across America with the story you're not going to get elsewhere. And, of course, we hope that many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family and help us, partner with us as we try to educate the American people about the fact we are on the edge of an abyss. We're about to go into very, very serious financial problems. And with that, of course, will become a massive extension of government control. There's going to be civil unrest in this country, in part because of the war, in part because of what I believe will be orchestrated acts of terrorism, and perhaps even biological, and perhaps even nuclear warfare. I'm not talking about something imaginary. I'm talking about what's planned. If you don't believe it's planned, you should certainly read the New World Coming report put out by the CFR, in which they say history does not just happen. History does not just happen. It's created. History does not just happen. It's created. And then they go on to tell you about all the terrorist attacks that are coming. And most people would not be able to put two and two together. How did they know all these terrorist attacks were coming when they put this report out in 1999? And, of course, the co-author of the New World Coming report, ex-Senator Gary Hart, speaking before a meeting of the Council on Foreign Relations 3 days after the terrorist attack, said, there is a chance the President of the United States can use this disaster or this tragedy to bring about what his father talked about only once, and that is the New World Order. There's a chance the President of the United States can use this disaster. 3,000 people are dead, and Gary Hart's talking about using the disaster. Yet he'd written extensively about the coming terrorist attacks. I wonder what Gary Hart knew that the average American doesn't know today. So you have to understand we're moving into difficult times. And that's our message to get out across America. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. You can pull down our newsletters there. You can listen to us 5 hours a day and not get anything accomplished. But tell other people about our program. Try to get them to listen. Try to get them to understand that they stand to lose everything they have, their 401k, their IRA, their stock holdings, their home, perhaps even their lives, their freedom. So if you believe that there's a problem, seriously consider partnering with us on our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And once again, we are putting on an all-day conference on the 23rd of November out at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. We hope you'll be there. Great talks, syllabus, luncheon, but you have to know ahead of time if you're going to be there. So if you'd like to come, well, I would love to hear from you. Again, our number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America, believe me, is under attack today. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and right now, of all people, we have Nathan calling in. Hi, Nathan, how are you doing?
Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening. Listen, let me go through a more or less a 7-count indictment against the central banking system here. I'll try and keep this brief, but I believe that it's far more devastating than even what we've covered so far, because the central banks, in my opinion, violate the laws of God on 7 essential fronts. The commandments against idolatry and the commandment against blasphemy. The foundations are able to finance paganism. They're basically able to use these foundations as propaganda mills for paganism. The commandment against murder. We have assassinations of Kennedy, men like Kennedy and King, people who had challenged the system in an attempted assassination on Andrew Jackson. No stealing. Well, the plunder of our national wealth. The commandment of honest weights and measures. The commandment of the prohibition against animal cruelty. The bankers and the concentration of wealth tends to facilitate the formation of factory farms, the death of the family farmer, and that obviously affects not only human livelihood, but animal livelihood too. Sexual immorality, well, the foundations, the Kinsey Report. And finally, the honoring of just courts. The Constitution is undermined by this. We have a vast cartel that's able to operate over and above the Constitution. And so my conclusion here is that we need an honest money system, and we need to uphold the laws of God. It's that simple, folks. That's my opinion.
All right. Paul, how would you respond to Nathan?
Well, I agree with Nathan. We need an honest money system, but even if we had an honest money system, we still got evil men and women in power that are manipulating you and robbing you and stealing your children away and placing them in homosexual foster homes. So what we really need to do, not just get an honest money system, but educate the people how to be
self-reliant, how to be responsible for their own actions, and how not to depend on the government for handouts, and not because government tax you on one hand, then turns around and gives it back to you in programs to get you addicted, so it creates more and more unemployment, more and more problems, you see. And what we need to do is get, get control back of everything, control back of our family, control back of our counties, our cities, our states, control of everything, you see, and put evil back where it belongs, hopefully digging ditches for a living. And so it's just deeper than money.
All right, you're absolutely right, Paul. What we need is a revival in America. We need men of integrity and honesty. You would not have the problems if you had moral people in positions of power. And, of course, that really is the common denominator of that. And returning to our Constitution, which limits the power of government. And, of course, whenever you have, a government that can tax the people and then give the money back again, people get dependent upon government. It's all kind of constitutional. The original Constitution limited the power of the federal government. And the fact that the good people, in return for the promise of something better, would give up their freedom with the idea that they're going to get something for the government for nothing, without the realization that government has no money other than what it takes from us by force and then uses to control us. That's what it's all about. If we understand the Constitution, we would, of course, rise up in righteous indignation and demand that most of our congressmen be put in prison for violating of the laws of our land.
Didn't one of our founders say, I don't know who it was, maybe you'll know, Stanley, that he says that the Constitution was made for noble and righteous people. It will work with no other.
John Adams.
Right.
I'm going to explain to you something, Nathan, about government. Government is like a big mama. It wants to do everything for you. You see, your insecurity, the people's insecurity, is their security. The more insecure you are, the more secure they are, because their security depends on your insecurity, because they look, if you were an individual, meaning one with God, that's where the word individual came from, and you didn't need anything from the state, they have no power. Their power depends on you needing them. And if there isn't a need out there, they'll create the need so they can be in business, because that's what keeps them in power and in business, is you needing their services. And if people all realized this all of a sudden and took back their own lives, the whole government structure would collapse. The only thing we would have is limited government. You know, we need police, we need army, we need people to take care of or keep our roads open and paved and all this. So there's a certain amount of government you need, but you would need welfare and all the programs that they have. And I mean, they're spending, I would say that if that could be the case, your taxes will go from 60 cents on a dollar to 10 cents on a dollar. You could put most of your money in your pocket, and it would still be more than enough for government, you see. But the problem is, because we don't understand government, which really what it does is it cripples individualism and it creates dependency. And the more dependent you are, the more secure they are, because that's the job security, you see. You understand what I'm trying to say?
Okay.
Well, sir, you covered a mouthful there. I just would like to leave off with one point, if I could. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. It's my opinion that there's one thing that should have been included expressly in the original Constitution that I wish had been, and that was a profession of monotheistic faith in which God was expressly invoked. That, I think, would have addressed a lot of the problems, because it would have allowed a greater degree of spiritual protection over our nation. And it would have put us directly under God's providence and protection in a way that I think that the powers of spiritual darkness would not have been able to threaten it as much as it has. Now, as it was, we were protected for a long time, and I think to some extent we still are. I believe that many aspects of our nation, I would say our nation is miraculous in many, many respects. But I think that it's my one wish that the Founding Fathers had included this express declaration of the Lord's sovereignty over this nation. And I'm going to leave it with that.
I may or may not
agree.
Thank you so much, Nathan. And I think the reason that they did not invoke the this Lord's sovereignty. It was assumed. Everybody accepted it. Everybody knew that we were a Christian nation under God. I mean, there was no question at all in anybody's mind. Not that you had to be a Christian at all. You could be a Jew and you could live here and be welcomed and practice your religion as you wanted to. But everybody knew that this was a nation under God, and it would have felt to be almost redundant. Incidentally, Paul, that quotation you were asking about by John Adams, "We have no government armed with power capable of contending with human passions and bridled by morality and religion. Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." And I think that really says it so well.
That's right. You demoralize the people and you've lost your Constitution, because demoralized people are not going to back or embrace the Constitution. They're going to embrace government programs.
That's absolutely right. And of course, the problem is that they what they have done is they've used the external threat, the threat of wicked communism, or wicked Nazism, or the wicked Japanese, without ever pointing out that we'd financed both the Nazis and the communists. But we had to have that external threat to justify this massive, large, centralized government to protect us. And then, of course, when we had this massive government, then we could develop all these techniques for controlling our own population. The satellites that could watch us were developed to watch the Russians. The technology that they have for listening and watching and monitoring everything we do, were supposedly developed to watch the nasty Russian spies, or to listen in at the Russian embassy. But the ultimate plan was the control of everybody on the face of the earth, but they couldn't tell the American people that. They wouldn't have gone for it. So we had to deceive them and make them think that we were fighting communism. All the time we were financing communism. And those of you who may have wondered why it was so important that Congressman Larry McDonald's plane, 007, Korea 07, be shot down in the early 80s, was simply the fact that Larry McDonald had a foundation. And the information he was accumulating was how our government and our corporations and our banks were financing communism. Well, the last thing that they could allow for the American people to understand is we were financing the best enemy money could buy. Because if that was true, then maybe we shouldn't be wasting all this money fighting communism. And if we stopped fighting communism and financing communism, it would have simply imploded, you know, starting back in 1919 and 1920, and it would no longer be a threat. And the same thing is true, of course, as Islamic terrorism. And those of you who haven't read my September newsletter, go to my website, look at the September newsletter, and understand who it was who financed the Islamic terrorist movement. Go ahead.
Well, you can see that that's true. Before, how many people died in the Vietnam War fighting communism for 7 or 8 years or whatever, how long?
About 10 years, right.
There you go. How many people died? What do you have in Vietnam? No, communism. So we had, what, millions or thousands of millions of Americans died fighting communism for the past 50, 75 years. And what do you have? All the countries that we died in fighting communism, that's communism.
Right, well, you couldn't do that bad a job unintentionally. And, of course, you have to understand it's all a facade. Everything is a facade. Everything is smoke and mirrors to keep the American people from understanding that behind all the affairs of mankind are these spiritual forces that we talk of so often. And, of course, one of the most interesting parts is the spiritual aspect of these people who have gone into the upper echelons of banking. Now, that doesn't mean that every banker is part and parcel of this spiritual movement. But many of the leaders of this certainly are, and they know exactly what they're doing and who they really owe their wealth and power to.
You know, let me read something here on page 200 that a lot of people didn't know. I'm going to read the, the Democratic Platform of 1840, so you can understand the Democratic Platform of 1840 and the Democratic Platform of today. Resolved that Congress has no power to charter a United States bank. That we believe such an institution to be one of the deadly hostilities to the best interests of the government, dangerous to our republican institutions and the liberties of the people, and calculated to place the business of the country within the control of a concentrated money power and above the laws and the will of the people. This was Democratic platform of 1840. Can you believe this?
Now, was 1840 or 1830?
1840.
1840, all right. So basically, of course, Andrew Jackson served as our president from 1828 until 1836 when he was left office. But of course, at those days, the Democrat Party was a conservative party. In other words, they wanted to limit the power of big government, and they certainly did not want a central bank because they realized that the central bank was a tool of those who would ultimately enslave the population.
The Democrats are for the people, and the Republicans, when you read this book, were basically for the corporations and big business.
And now, of course, the both political parties are for the corporations and big business.
In fact, they both serve the same. They do consensus with the same master.
In fact, it's amazing here in California to watch all the ads being put on by the Democrats. I mean, they've got so much money on the ads for Gray Davis, night after night, hour after hour, you know, two or three ads. And the same thing for Bustamante, who's running for lieutenant governor. The same thing in our area for a man named Rusty Reyes. I have yet to see an ad for his opponent, and yet, of course, Rusty Reyes keeps attacking his opponent in his ads, the opponent, that's Jeff Denham, does have some ads, but you have to realize where all the big money here in California is behind the Democrat. Why? Because we're the sixth largest economy in the world, and they intend to control this. They're dedicated to socialism now, at least at the state level.
They're on a gravy train.
Right. And people have to understand what socialism really is. It's the centralization of power with government. And then, of course, when you've got all power centralized with government, then the people of great wealth come in and buy and sell the politicians, and you have really the transfer of power from the people, when, of course, they have limited government, to the people of great wealth and the institution of a feudalistic system. That's why people of great wealth support socialism, and that's why many of them support the Democrat Party, or they can support it in the national level, the Republican Party as well, because both parties are pushing towards ever bigger government. Now, there are some good Republicans who do adhere to the Constitution. But most of them don't understand the Constitution. Most of them simply play the political game. They don't care whether they call themselves Republicans or Democrats. They're dedicated neither to the right or the left. They're only dedicated to staying in power and, of course, using that power to enrich themselves. And that is a great tragedy. And as long as they don't rock the boat and go along with the system, why, they can retire as very, very wealthy men. If, of course, they make a fuss, they get out of line, why, they'll have 100 FBI agents investigating them and watching their every move. That's how the system is played.
You know, this brings me to something. I was watching O'Reilly about 3 days ago, and he was really hammering on the INS and how they allowed this guy, what was his name, Calvo, to stay in instead of deporting him, that snuck in the United States and everything. So he wanted... he caught the INS wanted to forge a document to this border agent. He wanted him to change something on a document, and he refused because he didn't feel it was the right thing to do. So that this particular person who works for INS changed it for him. So he wanted to have this INS agent on because there's really a war between now the Border Patrol, the border agents, and INS, and to have him on. And so someone else came on instead, and he says, well, where is this guy? How come he doesn't come on the show? He said they told him that he cannot, and they're putting pressure on him, and if he comes on, he'll get fired. So, you know, if I was a border agent, I'd come on the show and get fired. But the point is, this man didn't. Why? Because he's afraid to lose his paycheck, and it comes right down to money again. You can control people through money, and they'll sit there. They realize there's corruption there, but they won't say anything, because they're afraid to lose their job and afraid to lose their paycheck, because they may not be able to go to the movie or buy beer or feed the family or whatever. I'll tell you something. I get fired, and I would rather get fired and know I sleep at night knowing that I'm at peace with God because I've done something that's the right thing to do. And I dig ditches for a living to feed my family and then to sit there and sell my country down the river for a paycheck. And I wish a lot of other people would do that. Come forward that work for public office, whether they're policemen or counselors or whatever they, border agents, whatever they may be, blow a whistle if you see something wrong and then clear your conscience And you'd be surprised. You may not get fired, because if enough people will put pressure on them, they realize there's corruption there, and they put pressure on them, you may not get fired. Just the opposite may occur to what your fears may be.
Well, I'll tell you what, Paul. I as you know, I do 5 hours of talk radio a day, and I will tell you that they'll not only be fired, sometimes they'll come up with trumped-up charges and try to send them to prison, and sometimes they'll succeed and actually send the innocent people to prison simply as a matter of firing them. And then, of course, when you do come forward as a whistleblower, nobody ever hears what you have to say. And I've had some of the most amazing interviews with people from Customs and of course, from the DEA and ex-FBI agents, people like that. But their message is never heard, because you can come forward and you can tell the truth, but since the media is controlled, the information doesn't get out. And that's why it's so vitally important we have programs like Radio Liberty that are going to tell you that. You know, and of course, I don't watch O'Reilly, because he's not going to tell you the whole story. Oh, he'll give you the Rupert Murdoch's version of the truth. But remember, Rupert Murdoch, when he was in school, was known as Rupert the Red, because, of course, he had a bust of Lenin on his desk, and he still has that bust of Lenin. And, of course, he is the conservative wing of the establishment dedicated to this New World Order and New World Religion. And, of course, he controls so much of the media, and that media is not conservative, no matter what they may want you to believe. It is simply giving you what they want you to believe is the other side, and is not giving you the other side. It's giving you the information that it will give you the impression you're hearing the truth. So we're in real trouble, but I certainly respect the people who have come forward, and they've made tremendous sacrifices, and they've certainly lost their jobs. And, of course, the Bush administration is doing everything they can to take away the whistleblower protection from the individual government employee who does tell the truth. In fact, the Bush administration is doing more than the Clinton administration ever did to silence employees. The Bush administration is telling government employees not to answer Freedom of Information Act requests, even though that's the law, and he's told them he'll stand behind them if they violate the law and do not fill FOIA, a Freedom of Information request. Well, we're in real, real trouble. We're real trouble because the Christian population is backing our president.
That's right.
And yet, of course, you should watch what he's doing, not listen to what he says.
But you know why they're backing him, see? Because of the abortion issue. He is, you know, leans a little bit in favor of, gives abortion, anti-abortion people, you know, people who are against abortion, certain little, how can I say that, you know.
He throws him a little bone every now and then.
There you go.
He says the right thing on abortion. You have to understand, his mother has always been pro-abortion. His father was pro-abortion until it became politically expedient to become pro-life, which he did when he was going to run as a conservative a candidate. But he was also always pro-death, George Herbert Walker Bush. And George W. Bush, of course, gets support from the Christian population because he's done a few things, I would agree with as far as the pro-life position is concerned. Recently, he took $30 million away from some government agency because he said they were going to, use it to finance abortion, international agency. And then he gave it to another agency to spend for population control. So he has hoodwinked an awful lot of good people and good Christians, because he has given some votes that were favorable to the pro-life position. But look at everything else he's doing. And the question is he really pro-life, or is he simply pretending to be pro-life? Is this all simply staged to rally the good people behind him as he takes our nation into World War III?
Well, you know, we have a man here running for governor that's basically one of the front runners, and hopefully to God he won't make it. But he got on the pro-life bandwagon and believes one strike and you're out. He's a one strike and you're out person. And in California, at least you got three strikes and you're out. You know, if you haven't learned twice and you keep doing dumb things, you know, prison, I guess, maybe should be the thing so you can learn your lesson. But this guy here has a jail cell for every human being in Oregon, and one strike and you're out. So you can't even make an honest mistake. You could be up the river for 7.5 years for something that you might even be innocent. And He is the worst person ever I've ever seen, 100 times worse than Bush ever could be. And he's got the Christian backing because he's on the pro-life platform.
Now, is this running in Oregon?
Yes, Kevin Mannix.
All right, fine. And what's his opposition like?
Well, his opposition is a Democrat. I can't think of his name offhand, but he isn't any good either.
All right, so you got a choice of Tweedledum or Tweedledee. Doesn't really matter which one you vote for, nothing changes. Is that about it?
That's it. One believes in corporate fascism, basically, a jail cell for everybody, and the other guy, God knows where the other guy stands, but I know he isn't any good either, so you have two choices. And of course, you have a third choice. I can't think of that man's name. I believe he's a libertarian, but he'll never make it because, you know, the big money is the Republicans, the Democrats. They got all the money behind them. They got all the Christians behind them. They got millions of dollars. The other guy, lucky if he's got $10,000 to spend, so he, you know, a snowflake has got a better chance of surviving in hell that this guy got to make it because they got the newspapers on their side. They got the media, they got TVs, they got everything, so they control the events, and the other guy doesn't even get into debates with them on TV. So there you go.
Well, we got almost the same thing here in California, although I'm certainly going to, I'm not going to talk about who I'm going to vote for, but at least I do not believe we can afford another 4 years of Governor Davis and this massive deficits that he's created. We're out of time, Paul. The book, The Coming Battle, is available. If you'd like to know more about it or suggest a donation, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And our guest this evening has been Paul Walter. Paul, thank you so much for being with us. Give my best to Lorraine.
Thank you, Mr. Monteith.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. And this is Dr. Stan asking you to pray for America, to pray for revival in this country, to certainly pray for our leaders, for our ministers, and lastly, to remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And don't forget about our conference we're going to have there on the 23rd of November. Hope to see you there. It should be an exciting time. And until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
Problems too, so. Well, we'll leave this up with Barbie.